In South Africa, other legacies persist. One of the most stubborn has been the effect of apartheid on education. This week, South Africa's Human Rights Commission said that virtual apartheid is alive and well in the nation's schools, 5 years after the end of white minority rule. Black schools located in black townships are still crippled by decades of neglect, while adding black students to previously all-white schools has not promoted integration. Louis Friedberg is a white reporter in his 40s who was born and raised in South Africa. Friedberg graduated from the elite, all-white South African College School in Cape Town, the nation's oldest college prep school. He recently returned to Cape Town and has this story on what it's like in post-apartheid South Africa.
I recently came across a recording my father made in 1965 of a Gilbert and Sullivan operetta I performed in when I was in the ninth grade. The operetta was The Gondoliers. As far as I can remember, I played the Duchess of Plaza Toro. Somehow dressing up as a girl to play a female role didn't seem strange. The South African College School, or SACS as we called it, was more like an English prep school than a public school on the southern tip of Africa. It was founded in 1829 and helped train generations of whites to run the old South Africa. The school looks very much like it always has, with its neoclassical buildings and immaculately kept playing fields for rugby and cricket. But 30 years after I graduated, I've come back to a very different scene. Instead of Gilbert and Sullivan operettas, students sing Inkosi Sikelel' iAfrika. It was once the outlawed anthem of the Black Resistance Movement. Today, it's the official anthem of the new South Africa.
Did you get up to line 16?
Yes, sir.
Right.
21.
Up to 21. Right, that is on. Line 16.
In Latin?
Yes, please.
Sabito omnes tubicinus tubas vehementa inflabant, which means suddenly all the trumpeters blew their trumpets violently.
Latin is still a popular class, but there's a completely new addition to the curriculum, Xhosa, an indigenous language spoken by millions of black South Africans.
Ufunda kusi phi sikolo, which school do you attend, sir? Ndifunda e SACS.
Down the hall, Simon Perkin, an old classmate of mine who is now the school's deputy headmaster, leads a discussion on the impact of the Soweto uprisings in 1976. They led to the release of Nelson Mandela in 1990.
By 1990, even before 1990, in the late 80s, P.W. Botha was already repealing some apartheid legislation. In the late 80s, who was P.W. Botha meeting with?
The ANC.
The ANC and Mandela. You know, so
I've not seen Perkins since he and I were students here, when any mention of Mandela would have been unthinkable.
I think it's a huge achievement. We've integrated what were monolithic, racist schools very, very peacefully.
Albie Sachs, the renowned anti-apartheid activist, graduated from the school in 1950. He is now a justice on South Africa's new constitutional court. He says only a handful of schools, mainly in conservative Afrikaner communities, have seen violent protests against integration like those of the American South in the 1950s and 60s.
It's been done usually with joy and pleasure, not, you know, haven't had to send in armed guards. There have been a few incidents here and there, but overwhelmingly it's been done with good grace, and it's very, very positive.
But at the annual rugby game against the school's main rival, an exclusive private school called Bishops, it's clear there's still a long way to go. Only one player on each team is black. In Instead of apartheid laws, blacks face a new obstacle, high tuition costs. For decades, white public schools in South Africa received a disproportionate share of government subsidies. Over the past 3 years, in a hugely controversial move, Mandela's government cut those subsidies. The goal was to equalize spending between black and white schools. But most formerly white schools have responded by raising their fees substantially. Gordon Law is the headmaster at SACS.
The fees have gone up, and so we are even more out of reach of the pocket of the ordinary man in the street, the 90% of the population, because of the actual economic situation that the majority of black people find themselves in at the moment.
Shepherd Matshlatshlana, a former black school principal, was recently appointed labor minister in Mandela's cabinet. He says there's another problem at SACS and other formerly white schools known as Model C schools.
We have not managed to integrate teachers. All the Model C schools are still having white teachers. And they will continue, of course, to use an argument and say you can't, yes, it's a principle, we can't just chase people away simply because they are white. When they do get vacancies in those schools, they don't make any attempt to get a black teacher, because in this country the problem is blackness is associated with low standards.
Headmaster Gordon Law says the school has tried to recruit black teachers, but many of the best prefer to stay in township schools. Many others aren't qualified to teach at the level expected at SACS, a legacy of apartheid's inferior education system.
I mean, the more the whole school can be normalized, the better. But I've got no hang-ups about it. I'm not in a tearing hurry just to equalize the number of black, colored, Muslim, white teachers here. I want the best teachers for the school, and that will always be the policy.
For black students, attending the school has given them an education most can only dream about, but it has come at a price. Sally Solomon, who is colored, is the school's first non-white head prefect, the South African equivalent to student body president. He says black and colored students who attend formerly white schools are often ridiculed when they go home to the townships.
The feeling is you are now going to this school and, well, now you're really sort of upper class and you really can't associate with students who go to a colored school, a black school. And there's this sort of division where you're regarded as being different to a fellow colored student.
Most black students still attend schools in ramshackle buildings without libraries or laboratories, or in many cases even enough desks to go around. The consequences are dire. Out of some 35 million black South Africans, only 2.5 million have high school diplomas. 250,000 have college degrees. So the dilemma facing the government is whether to preserve schools like SACS, islands of excellence which serve only a tiny minority of blacks, or whether to spend its scarce resources on upgrading apartheid-era schools in the black townships. Albie SACS.
If you simply closed the school down and sent the teachers to teach in the very poor neighborhoods, I don't think that's what we really want. We want to open up and upgrade the very, very underdeveloped schools without downgrading the schools that, even if it was through privilege and elitism in the past, had particular standards.
There appears to be a consensus in government circles that the once elite white schools should be preserved, but only if they do more to embrace the new order and do it quickly. Simon Perkin, my old classmate, says that's not altogether realistic.
It's going to take more than 4 years for educational systems that were neglected, made subservient to apartheid, to recover. And I don't think one can make any dogmatic assessment until we have another 20, 30 years of progress. Then maybe it will be the time to start pointing fingers, but not at this stage. It's still far too early.
For now, elite schools like SACS present an avenue of hope for many blacks. Philip Samuels, a janitor at the school, rings the bell between periods, as he has for decades.
Yeah, I spoke to my daughter the other day. I would like to one day to see one of my grandchildren coming to SACS. And it might happen in a year or two's time. And I hope I'll still be at Sykes to see him running around in the junior school fields. And I think that will probably make me very happy.
As I leave, students are singing the old school song, "The SAC is the college for me, the best in the country round." The challenge facing the school is not only whether it can preserve its status as one of the best in the country, but whether it will be able to throw open its doors even wider to the country's black majority. Once it was needed to train a white elite, now it will be needed to prepare a black leadership for the new South Africa. For NPR News, this is Louis Friedberg in Cape Town.